Well, good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a kind of dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves. We hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And just a reminder that we are recording this show in advance and won't be taking any calls today. And Liz, I think you're going to take over and introduce our topic today.
Thank you, Ron. Yes, hello. Super excited about this show. And we're talking about streams and roads. So Maine has a lot. I actually looked it up. There's more than 30,000 miles of streams in Maine. So you can go all the way around the world, including the ones that are ephemeral or only flow for part of the year. And where a stream crosses a road, the folks in charge of maintaining that road have a lot that they have to think about. There's the health of the stream environment itself and the critters that rely on it. There's also erosion and storm damage that can undermine the embankment and the road, especially in big storms. And we know that's been a big deal in recent years. So our guests today are working on a project called Stream Smart, and it's about rethinking the design of these stream crossings to help make them work better for everyone, the road users, the critters, and the taxpayers who fund the construction and repair of these culverts. So super excited to have with us today Sarah Haggerty, as a conservation biologist from Maine Audubon, and she has been one of the point people on the Stream Smart project. Julie Sells from the Knox Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District, and Meg Rasmussen from the Midcoast Council of Governments. So welcome, everybody. We do introductions at this point in the show to help listeners associate your voice with your name, among other things, since they can't see us. So Sarah, tell us a bit about yourself and your role at Audubon.
Thanks, Liz. Hi, I'm Sarah Haggerty, and I want to thank you guys for inviting us to talk with you and to talk about Stream Smart. I'm a conservation biologist and the GIS manager with Maine Audubon, and I'm also the coordinator for the Stream Smart program in Maine. Maine Audubon is the oldest and largest Maine-based conservation organization, and our mission is to conserve Maine wildlife and wildlife habitat by engaging people in education, conservation, and action. We don't just do birds, we do fish, we do other wildlife species. I've been working with Maine Audubon for 9 years now, and I work on a wide variety of topics. Some of the biggest topics I work on include renewable energy and how renewable energy intersects with wildlife and wildlife habitats. But a lot of my work is on habitat connectivity, and that's where Stream Smart comes in. But I also do like roadkill surveys and look at habitat fragmentation issues. I also have
what are habitat fragmentation and connectivity mean?
Thank you. I'm trying to get rid of jargon, and I really appreciate when people call me out on it. So habitat connectivity means where you have some sort of disruption that breaks up the area that an animal needs to live. So if you put a road between where a turtle likes to spend his winter and where she spends her winter and then where she wants to go and lay her eggs, then that's a disruption or a fragmentation of the habitat. It means that she can't get to all the places that she needs to go throughout her life. And it can be roads, it can be construction buildings, it can be fences, it can be utility corridors where animals that really need trees don't have that. They have that big open space that they're not willing to go through. So there are a lot of things that can fragment habitat. Thank you for calling me out.
Yeah. And where in the state are you based? Where do you live?
I live in Freeport, and my office is down in Falmouth at Gilsland Farm.
All right. Awesome. So thank you. And Julie, over to you.
Thank you again for having us. My name is Julie Sells. I serve in the role of an office manager at the Knox Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District. The soil and water conservation districts were formed as a result of the Dust Bowl, and it was the federal legislation that enacted that allowed the formation. And what so it's a state local funded outfit, which is fabulous. So in the state of Maine, we have 16 soil and water conservation districts. Knox Lincoln, we have two counties in one office. And each district focuses on something that's really specific to their area. So, like Cumberland has storm water, a lot on invasive terrestrial plants. We also focus on erosion control. We have a number of trainings for contractors. We're working closely with Maine Audubon, thanks to Midcoast Council of Governments, to support this, to expand the erosion control offerings to include the culvert crossing. I'm just trying to think. And next week, actually, we do have an erosion control training for contractors in Wiscasset. So this, we're working with the Maine DEP to offer this.
Where are you based,
Oh.
and what? Just a tiny bit about your own, like why are you? How did you land at a soil and water conservation district?
Certainly, certainly. So our office is located in Rock, live in Rockport. I'm originally from Ohio. They're always been connected to the natural world, although I veered off and started a path on political science and international relations. And I landed in Maine and wanted to help out. The way I could was being an office manager, and to help out. What I also can bring to the table is that I like to network and bring the experts with the people who need them. So that's part of the role of a soil and water conservation district, is to match up the folks who know a lot with people who need to know.
That's awesome. It feels like, yes, the soil and water and the critters need their diplomats too. And so that's part of what you're doing. That's great. Okay, over to you, Meg. Welcome. Tell us about yourself and COGS.
Well, thanks. I'm also excited to be here. So yes, I am the director of sustainability programs here at the Midcoast Council of Governments. And what a Council of Governments, we are a planning organization set up by the state of Maine to help communities find solutions to their challenges. Like, so for example, finding solutions for affordable housing, transportation, sustainable development as towns grow. And also, importantly, resilience to flooding caused by more and more intense storms we've been seeing. So I work closely with individual towns to help them implement their priorities, resilience priorities. But we also work on a regional scale, looking at where towns could collaborate on projects. And so for this project, we were looking across a couple of counties for where stream smart culverts made the most sense kind of across the region. And then we are going to help communities find funding, scope the work, and get that work done. So, and I've come to this role, my background is in landscape architecture. And because I'm a nature girl, and I just, some people are like, well, we're gonna do culverts. Like, is this the most exciting thing? It has a lot of impact. So I feel really good working on it.
I had, as you just mentioned, you hear or say the word culvert and think like, well, boy, that doesn't sound super fun. And I am here to tell you, I had the best time just watching the 20 some minute video, and I was blown away that I had already spent 20 minutes. And we can put the link to this video in our show notes. Maine Audubon has this cool tool that's called a stream table. And so another Audubon staffer goes through explaining the stream smart idea that I will ask Sarah to do in a minute, but I will just tell you it is super fun and there is a little Lego excavator involved. So Sarah, how does it work?
The Stream Table is a demonstration tool that helps people really, it helps these concepts really click for people because they can actually see this happening on a small scale. So we use it to essentially create a miniature stream with water and pretend stream, sand and rocks. We have trees on the banks. We have little tiny tree trunks that have fallen over into the water, just like you would see in a natural stream system here in Maine. We form a natural stream bed. We let it create pools and eddies and curves. And then we build a road across it. And we start by using a really traditional pipe, which is like most of the crossings that are on the landscape. And then we let the water go through the road. And it usually doesn't take long for problems to develop, just like we see in the real world. And then we turn up the water and make a big storm happen. And it usually doesn't take long for that undersized pipe to blow out. And then we go through the process again of building a crossing that is a bilge or an arch, and we even do an embedded culvert where you actually put some of the stream bed in this inside it, and we talk about why it's better and how to build them, and then we do the same thing. We turn up the water and have a big storm, and if we've done it right, they really just have a natural stream flowing through them as if there weren't a crossing there, and that's really the concept behind StreamSmart.
Wow, that was amazing. That was so efficient. Thank you. Tell us too about, since you already mentioned fish and other critters, what's the problem for them if a p undersized pipe pool on the downstream side or the pipe hanging above the water level?
Yeah, so these roadways really are sort of dams in the across the aquatic system across these streams. And what we do when we build roads is we build the roads and we say, how big or how small a pipe do I need to get the water through, but not necessarily the stream. And so it very quickly, when that pipe is too small, the water goes through it like a fire hose and it scours out a pool down below, and we can end up with the end of that pipe being set too far above the base of the stream, and then a fish would have to actually swim up and be able to jump through that and then be able to swim all the way through and get to the other side. And in the spring, the water's going to be going too fast. If they can't jump, they can't even get in it. At the end of the fall, there isn't going to be enough water in it, and there's nowhere to rest along the whole stretch of that culvert. And so it really does mess things up. And then it can also back up the stream on the other side. So you can end up with this big warm impoundment. And so fish that are really looking for a cold stream will actually not go through that if it's too warm. And so it becomes a barrier, even if they could jump up into the crossing.
Well, Julie, you have soil in the title of your organization, and I know that you're a generalist, but what are the kinds of problems that come because there are different kinds of soil that roads and streams go through? What are some of the problems that you see? Because you're often advising landowners who might not know about these kinds of things.
So we've seen over the course of many decades that cropland, pasture land, forest land have been converted over to more developed land. So there's housing, buildings, construction. So every time you disturb the soil, remove vegetation, there is a problem for erosion. And erosion meaning the sedimentation flowing into a nearby water source and potentially polluting and going downstream. So, in the state of Maine, there are a number of soil types ranging and that clay to loam to sand. And each one interacts with water differently, depending on the intensity, as well as the slope inclination, as well as the bedrock or whatever is underneath. Roots, any sort of vegetative roots will help absorb the soil. In terms of the soil types, there's a whole range of soil types in the state of Maine. Many, many years ago, there was a soil nationwide and specific to Maine. We have a physical tome, a large book of all of the different types of soils and the series of soils and the morphology. And it's broken down. It's also accessible online. So it's web soil surveys. You can link it through our website. Also, it's through the USDA. So it's at the federal level. You type in your address or county or state, and it pulls up this actual soil type that is in your area. Maine Geological Society has a bedrock map of what all of the bedrocks are in the state of Maine. And that also has a wide range. So all of that impacts
Sure,
the
and
erosion.
landowners, sometimes they're involved in making their own roads and their own culverts. So it isn't just towns that are doing this work or the state. So you're able to help people think about roads on their own property.
Yes. So one of the services we offer is a conservation tech consultant service. We also offer trainings on erosion control, a camp road, gravel road. We want to make sure it doesn't pollute the groundwater. We also want to make sure that it doesn't every year flood out and cause ruts, and you have to recreate it. So yes, that is one of our services.
I'm going to turn next to Meg, and before I do, I'll remind listeners, if you're just joining us, that you're listening to WRU Community Radio. This is Talk of the Towns. We're talking about streams today, road crossings over streams, and it's something called the Stream Smart Program. And our guests are in our virtual studio, Sarah Haggerty of Maine Audubon, Julie Sells from the Knox-Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District, and Meg Rasmussen, who's the Director of Sustainability Programs for the Mid-Coast Council of Governments. So, Meg, couple of questions, actually. I wondered if you could help us explain briefly, sort of a in between the intro to Councils of Governments that you gave a moment ago, about this work. So there's such a big diversity of we have very small towns in Maine, and you do in your area, and then much bigger ones. So bigger towns and cities have larger staffs and might even have an engineer on staff or whatever. And some very much don't. The road commissioner is also the clerk, is also the whatever. So who are which municipal officials are involved in this work? Is it selectmen in some cases, or who? How does that play out?
It goes from elected officials down to the people on the ground, like the road commissioners. Both of those categories of people have an interest in Stream Smart because even big towns or little towns, like that money, municipal budget is really stretched. So road maintenance is always a budget item. And every town has many, many culverts. Some are kind of ongoing issues. So, as we're having these bigger storms, culverts can wash out in big towns or little towns, right? And if they just put back in that same size pipe, chances are, it's going to wash out again and it could wash out the road. And that, is just a major expense. And it's also a like emergency access issue. It's an issue for people trying to get to work. It really causes a lot of problems when that happens. So the elected officials and town staff are interested in not having it happen. And the guys, men and women on the ground are also interested in not having that happen. So it's kind of everybody working together. And so, the way that towns are responding to this is that they, everybody wants to use taxpayer money most efficiently. And so, where they're making time to be interested in Stream Smart, and they are, it's because it's really well, come to find out like they really work. It's a little bit more of an upfront investment, but that road is not going to wash out in the next big storm, and it will hold for a much longer time than to have to periodically have to go in and repair and then have the potential issue of the risk of the more expensive road being a problem.
How do you advise towns to get the overall handle? I can imagine if you're working on one particular road crossing, there's a you can work on that. But what do towns do to kind of figure out the priorities?
We can work with towns to sit down and look at like where their culverts are. And then there is an assessment tool that they can use that will give a ranking. Like, for example, is this has this stream been documented as a good habitat for fish, right? if it has a high score on that, a high kind of habitat value, that's a good place for StreamSmart. But also, you can take a look at what your detour length is. Like, if it goes out, what's the detour length for an ambulance, say? And so you can factor that in. And so you can kind of come out with a way to rank your culverts in your town. I will say most towns know exactly which culverts like are the issue, right? But this is a good process because it's really good when you go for grant funding because you've proven that you are taking care of the highest priority, most important ones first, and then you can get the other ones later, and it just gives a good kind of multi-year roadmap.
And I suppose taxpayers who might be asking about how come they're getting a culvert, you have some documentation, the town has some documentation as to why this particular culvert needs attention first. Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah,
that's an
great,
excellent
great.
point.
This might be a good place to add back in, Sarah. We were so efficient in doing the intro to StreamSmart that we haven't said what the workshops consist of. And I know you're just off a couple days of doing them, so can you give us a quick overview of what to expect if you attend a StreamSmart workshop?
Yes, definitely. So every spring we do two introductory workshops. They're just a half day, but it's all very classroom oriented. And we give the basic outline of what StreamSmart is. And the idea behind StreamSmart crossings is that they allow for fish and wildlife to pass naturally, and they also protect the roads and public safety. And so they're big enough that the stream can function naturally. But they're also big enough that when those big storms come, the debris doesn't back up and it doesn't wash out the roadway. So we do those introductory workshops in the spring, and that's when you get to see the stream table. In the fall, right now, we do more in-depth 2-day trainings, and this is really for the folks on the ground who are actually putting them in. So we just came back from Bridgeton last night. We were there Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we were in the Mid-Coast up in Montville last week doing the same thing for 2 days. And those are much more in-depth, where we do a brief overview of what StreamSmart is, and then we actually go out in the field and we spend the first day talking about how to look at the stream, how to think about it, where to take data points, what the data is we're looking for. Then we come back, crunch the numbers, and we end on the second day with letting people play around with preliminary designs, what they would do on that crossing. And then we go back out into the field at the end and we look at our surveyed crossing and we look at the cross eye that have different problems, and we try to end on a beautiful StreamSmart crossing, which is exactly what we did up in Bridgeton yesterday.
And
Great.
these are workshops town by town. Is that what you're saying?
We do them, we bounce them around. We do them regionally. I have a big GIS map and I have it color coded, and I say, oh gosh, we haven't been out in this neck of the woods for 5 years. We hadn't been to Bridgeton since 2018. So it had been a little bit. So we try to make sure that we get Maine's pretty big. So we try to get to all parts of the state so that folks can come from the nearby towns to come to the workshops.
So each workshop, you have a mix of folks from several towns
We
learning together.
do, we do.
Yeah.
And we actually, it can be a pretty big mix, not just of municipal staff. We get a lot of foresters, we get a lot of engineers, we get natural resource agency staff, we get landowners, we get nonprofits. So it's really a big mix. So which is great because then we get relations so we can understand the problems in all these different areas with the different folks who are working on these projects.
You've all mentioned that local knowledge is really important, and this is no real surprise to people. Can you point to some areas where you've had some where towns have had major problems, and the effect of not having stream smart road crossings? Give us some examples so that our listeners have a sense of this, because they're just driving the roads. They're not necessarily seeing what you're seeing and what town officials and road crews are seeing. Who would like to start? Sarah, you want to start? And then.
So they have a folder on my desktop for road washouts, so that every time they're in the news, which unfortunately is every single year now, I can have those resources to make the workshops relevant. I think the biggest storms, or the biggest time that we had some big storms that caused the 2023, We keep hearing about it. I had people sending me pictures, and there were problems all over the state. There were coastal problems, a lot of problems in Western Maine where things are pretty steep. There's even a video clip that was going viral at the time of a road actually washing out down by Sunday River.
A related question for Meg. Remembering we've had other shows, we've talked with folks from Stonington, speaking of how hard 2023 was for everybody. And so I'm just curious your reflections on, since you used the word resilience, and that was the main word in our coastal sustainability flooding conversation. So how are you and the folks you're working with thinking about, like, where does this work fit in bigger climate resilience and sustainability planning and thinking?
It's a just a piece of it. Towns are facing, coastal towns are facing impacts to their working waterfronts, and also, other road flooding from sea level rise. So there's that piece. They're also facing some risks through wildfires, potentially higher risk. Tick-borne illnesses kind of on the rise. Like, I don't need to do the litany maybe, but it's a piece of it. And it's really heartening that towns are really embracing this. And I will say, like, because in Maine, like, people love the outdoors. And this is really a way to protect our resources. Like, people love to fish. And this is a way to go, you can make, we're solving a problem, but we're also, making these great opportunities for people to be able to get out and enjoy. And that's kind of the way that we're, that we think about it. Like, if we have issues with working waterfronts, well, it's an opportunity to, make this better, transform it, look to the future. And so as towns are kind of grappling, with all these issues that are coming at them, there's a lot of hope and a lot of positive feeling about this, and a lot of a lot of people are on board with it.
Speaking of people, I'll go to Julie. You mentioned if part of your a thing you like about your job is connecting people. So I wonder if you could tell us more about who all of the players are. It's sort of hard to keep track in my head that there are landowners, there are municipal officials, there are municipal staff, there's engineers and contractors and consultants and biologists. Do you see all of them as you go through your day and get questions from them and who wants to learn what and what's helping?
So we primarily interact with day to day with the residential folks of the counties, as well as ag producers, the farmers. We also have a great connection and network of Maine State has State of Maine has some wonderful specialists. So DEP, DACF, I'm sorry, Environmental Department of Ag, Conservation and Foresters, and the Maine Forest Service. Those three organizations have excellent resources that we interact with as well. The engineers, the contractors, we interact particularly with our training collaboration with Maine DEP and also StreamSmart through Maine Audubon.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in quickly. That reminded me that in the Stream Temple demonstration, there was a mention of to the forest products industry, and we don't have a lot of forest products industry in the WRU on air listening area, but it is something that I think Mainers are interested in because we know we do in the state. Does anybody want to say anything about that? I think I saw the Maine, the Forest Service has a whole, anyway, there's a whole side of it. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, definitely. So the Maine Forest Service has been a really strong partner of ours throughout the life of the program, which started in 2011. And we do workshops. We go to where the foresters are so that they can get these trainings. And there are some little flexibility maybe than a town or DOT. They can choose where to put crossings and maybe even abandon crossings and pull out those bridges. They also have the ability to put in temporary crossings. If they're going to access an area for a cut, maybe they just put in the footers of a bridge, put down a temporary bridge deck, go in, do the work, and as they come out, they pull that bridge deck and they won't be back for 30 or 50 years. And so that stream can just function naturally. There's no top on it. You make sure that those footers are wide enough, and the stream can function naturally. And there's a
That's so
lot of,
cool. I
yeah,
love
it
that.
really, really is. And it's really effective, and it's affordable, and it's cost effective, and it does the best thing for the natural resource as well.
Great. Well, let's just remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns on WERU. You've just heard from Sarah Haggerty, conservation biologist from Maine Audubon. We're also joined by Julie Sells of the Knox Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District and Meg Rasmussen of the Midcoast Council of Governments. Maybe you've each got a really cool success story, the one that you like to tell your family about because they're excited for you, or a funder. Tell us some examples of some really great ones and give us the specifics. Sarah, can we start with you and then we'll make the rounds?
Sure, I see a lot of because I get to travel all over the state. I get to see a lot of stream smart crossings. We've done a lot of work, and we try to prioritize these crossings because there's tens of thousands of culverts on the landscape in Maine, and so we try to prioritize with where we're going to get the best bang for our buck for the natural resource. Where do we have Atlantic salmon or alewives? Where are do we have problems with the roadway? Where is it a public safety issue? And we really try to prioritize those areas. And so a lot of work has been done up in the Sandy River, where there's fantastic Atlantic salmon habitat, but really all over the state. And I'm just gonna pull out one that we went to just yesterday because we ended our workshop on a beautiful stream smart crossing up in Bridgeton. We were with the Lakes Environmental Association, and they were our hosts, and they had worked on, in partnership with towns and the land trusts, three projects that just got finished in September. And so we went to this brand new crossing on a little road, and it was just absolutely fantastic. And it was the perfect example of all the things we've been talking about for 2 days.
Meg, how about you? Have you got an example that you like to call out and kind of say who was involved and how it all came together and what the success looks like?
Well, for us, we've just completed our study of where in the region where the stream smart culverts should go. So our next phase is to help towns implement that. So I will be back with lots of success stories. But I will say, kind of my success story that kind of comes to mind is in the town of Thomaston and Rockland and Rockport, there is a stream that goes from the Georges River up to Chickawacky Pond. And there's multiple culverts along that way. And these three towns are interested in potentially clearing that whole way so that it is, a contiguous stream. And we're looking forward to being able to explore that with them a little bit.
So it's a little bit of a different approach. It's taking a whole watershed and saying, how do we improve the full functionality of the watershed of the stream, which is different than a point by point kind of saying that a road commissioner might look at, but you're saying, oh, let's look at the ecology and see if we can restore something there.
Yeah.
Julie, have you got any examples that really come to mind that you really like to call out?
Certainly one that's within quarter of a mile from our office that I was able to pass by daily to see. And as a result of the December 2023 storm, a culvert that connected a hill community 90, that little street was completely washed out. There were two pipes that were inadequate to the amount of water coming through during the flood. So we watched the temporary installation, the various folks involved. That was obviously temporary. They needed to get some more funding. Within the past year, a Stream Smart culvert in. It's a solid structure, very wide, so any potential flooding going through anytime is will be well equipped, and that road will not be washed out. So there were residents involved that were stranded. They couldn't access.
Oh
They
yeah.
literally, that was the only road to the to out of their home. And we saw the multiple players involved.
Great, thank you. And it is ideal transition to what I wanted to ask next, which again, as a driver, which most of us are, I always wonder when I pass a culvert project happening, they're like about how bridges are built. Like, how do you get it dry in order to to do the work? Like, that is not at all obvious to me. And it was mentioned in the beginning of the stream table demonstration video. So I'll start with Sarah, and I just sort of walk through the notes I had. So step one is cofferdams upstream and downstream. And that was my first question. Why do you need a dam downstream?
Yeah, a great question. Even though once you pump the water out of your work area, once you start digging in Maine, you are going to hit water and that water is going to be dirty. And so you don't want that just going right back into your stream. And so you'll need to pump the fresh water that's up above your cofferdam around the work site. And then you need to take that dirty water and pump it out and let the sediment settle out either in the woods or in a detention basin so that the water can get back to the stream, but it's clean by the time that it gets there.
Yeah, cool. You jumped right to my next question, which is like, what's the difference between just mixed up water and dirty water? Like, there's obviously stream dirt that's in the stream. We learned it's called the substrate. That's the dirt that's at the bottom of the stream bed, and it's already got dirt, but it needs to settle out. And why is that important for fish or other parts of the ecosystem?
Mussel eaters. And so if there's a lot of sediment in the water, it can kind of gum up the works, right? They're not going to be able to breathe and they're not going to be able to get their food. And so we don't want a lot of sedimentation in the water. It can actually settle out. If you have too much sediment coming down, it can settle out across the nooks and crannies basically of that stream bed that makes a great habitat for fish to lay eggs feeding on. And so the natural movement of sediment is the systems have evolved for that. But when we create this big plug of sediment, it may be at a time of year that isn't natural for the stream system. It may be a different kind of sediment, right? It's coming from the bottom of this hole. And it's going to be in a quantity that is not going to be natural for this stream system. And so you want to make sure that you're not disrupting what would naturally be functioning in that stream.
And you mentioned salmon and alewives both have good lobbyists. Or, you know, like, I mean, not an, but so who? What are the other species that come up in these trainings? I know you're all over the state, but if you can think about our region and why.
So along the coast, those are probably the two sort of poster children for Stream Smart. We are the last state that has Atlantic salmon. They used to be in every major river east of the Hudson in New York. We're the last state that has them. So they're an endangered species, and we have a lot of habitat for them. So Atlantic salmon is a diadromous species, which means that it spends part of its life up in our freshwater streams and part of its life out in the ocean. And then the alewives do the same thing. And when we reopen these streams that alewives have historically been in, they need to go up to a pond and they will come in by the millions. And so it's really an amazing thing to see. But then when you move further inland, Maine is one of the best places for eastern brook trout. This is a cold water species. They need cold, clean water, free-flowing streams. And we have the best habitat, the most contiguous habitat in the whole range of this species. So that's the other probably highest priority fish species. But I do want to throw in a plug for wildlife because it
Yeah, I was
isn't
going to
just
ask.
about fish. I think the program started really thinking about fish passage because that's a priority for a lot of agencies. But we realize if we do it right and we're mimicking the stream inside that crossing, we should have banks that give the shape to the channel. And those banks actually provide an area for non-aquatic species, a species that don't want to be in the water, to be able to move from one side of the road to the other. When they don't have that, they go up and over the road, and that doesn't usually work out well for them. And so these crossings really are playing an important role in allowing fish and wildlife to pass through these roadways without dealing with cars.
So, what are some of those other non-fish species that come up the most?
We keep saying that we're going to put out some game
Turtles.
cameras and capture some. Turtles are one. Turtles, we think of them as hanging out in ponds, and that's all they do. Well, in the middle of the summer, those females need to go and lay their eggs, and they want to go to a particular place that they remember from 30 years ago that's sandy and sunny, and they will just go cross country. But then it's foxes, it's raccoons, it's salamanders and snakes. It's kind of anything that moves across the landscape, which is most of the stuff that we have.
So you've each mentioned some of the success stories, and you've mentioned that the Stream Smart program seems to make kind of sense for both roads and for wildlife and for our ability to get outside. I suppose there's some elements of resistance, people who are a little skeptical. And how do you, what are some of those reasons that people are skeptical, and how do you counter those concerns? I can imagine a road commissioner who's always put in a culvert, for instance, and says, you know, this is cheap and it's effective, and we know how to do that, and we don't know, need to involve anybody else. Is if I got that characterization right? Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, you absolutely do. There is a lot of that old school. I know what I'm doing. We're just going to keep doing it this way. We are starting to see more interest in these last few years as these storms get bigger and as they start washing out roadways. And then the other thing that helps is that grant funding and other funding opportunities that will help to defray the cost of putting in these larger crossings usually require that you put in a larger crossing. You can't just put in those small pipes anymore and have someone else pay you to do that. One of the other things that we've been excited about over the last few years is these field trainings that we've been doing. The one that I just did this week and last week is really attracting a lot of engineers. And so those are the folks putting this stuff in. They see what's coming. They're getting asked about it by the municipalities, and they're all on board. And we are just filling up these trainings with engineers and contractors.
I'm always struck by the fact that engineers are going to save us in so many ways. Meg,
Yep.
have you got some examples of kind of resistance that you've kind of worked through? You talked about the fact that you're just starting your process of prioritization, but you may have some examples of that resistance, and then we'll ask Julie the same question.
Yeah, I think the budgetary, the cost, it can be an issue because it is more expensive to put in one of these, as we mentioned, than just a pipe. That said, as more and more success stories are coming out there, the cost effectiveness of this is becoming clear, and the elected officials are more on board with it, and as Sarah says, the engineers are more on board. The road commissioners really are more on board than it's something that is moving in the right direction for that. But there's still towns that need help with these. But the Maine has the Maine Infrastructure Adaptation Fund, which they put out, which help municipalities with just these kinds of projects. And this year, the focus will be on what's called nature-based solutions, which is Stream Smart is a nature-based solution. So if you want funding for your culverts, you have a good spot for it, like you can really go for that money. And so having the state support these kinds of projects has been really helpful.
So is that nature-based, is that a kind of a philosophy that if we allow nature to do what it does best, it saves us money, it saves the environment? Sarah, comment on that concept, and then we'll ask Julie for some resistance and how she's overcome some of that.
Yeah, that is exactly what the concept of nature-based solutions is. We sometimes think that we have the best ideas and we know how to do this right. And what we're really finding is that, nature's been doing this for millions of years. And if we can learn from that, we will have a better, whatever the project is, you will have a better project, a better infrastructure. It'll last longer. It'll fit better into the landscape, and it'll function as it's intended to. And so Stream Smart is exactly that. The idea is to get out of the stream with these crossings and just let the stream act like a stream. That is the golden rule of Stream Smart.
Great. And Julie Sells from Knox Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District. Examples of kind of the resistance that you find, and how do you overcome some of that resistance?
I have only interacted with a few folks who have said that the initial investment is what is concerning. I can then defer to Sarah's fabulous slide at the StreamSmart where she details short-term investment versus long-term investment and the overall cost. And if you're looking at dollars and cents, I mean, it's a clear winner to have the initial investment to install the StreamSmart culvert, the bridge, and it saves money in the long term.
Right.
All right, I'll take us back to the stream table one more time, because it reminded me that the super classic example of this is like the Mississippi River in New Orleans, right? That like another thing that rivers do, which is challenging for humans, is that they move. So I wondered if we have a couple minutes and could chat about that a bit. That like, and I imagine maybe it happens in really small scales on someone's private property, and they call Julie's office to say, oh gosh, what do I do? This is because what happens? So too, because I love talking about this stuff, what happens is the faster water erodes the bank and moves the channel of the stream, right? And then sometimes you can see these from airplanes. They create oxbow lakes. So the river cuts itself off and makes itself a more efficient channel. So have towns or folks in charge of roads had to deal with much of that, or is that a not too common?
I have never heard of that exact thing happening, Julie.
No, okay, good. That's sort of an academic question in that, so it's
Well,
possible.
yeah, I'll throw in a little bit on that. So the way that streams function is that they do move up and down, and they move side to side over time. And it sort of depends on where you are. If you have a good incised channel, then the stream is pretty contained. Where we were yesterday was pretty rocky, and so there isn't a ton of movement. If you're more in the floodplain and it's got a lot of room to move sideways, that's where you can have problems if we've already built into that floodplain. There are different ways to address it. StreamSmart is built on stream simulation design that was created by the U.S. Forest Service, and they talk a little bit more about, because they do a lot more floodplain stuff, putting those floodplain outlets so that you can drain the water beyond just your one crossing. And so that's one way that you can address sort of a filled floodplain without having it all focusing through that one crossing.
Cool.
So you've all got partners that are engaged in this work. If you haven't mentioned any of the partners and you'd like to, let's talk about that. And then how does this all come together with grant funding? Just remind us about the grant funding. Sarah, start with you. We'll go to Meg and then to Julie.
Sure. We have so many partners in StreamSmart, and of course, the soil and water districts have been partners from day one, and they're all over the state, and so they have the connections to the local folks, and so they're such a perfect partner for us. And of course, regional planners and the councils of government are another fantastic place to have that bigger picture. But then we also work with federal agencies, state agencies, other nonprofits. We have partnerships with the forest products industry, with the university system. So all these different folks all working together to get the same towards the same end for whatever the different reasons may be to get these StreamSmart crossings on the landscape.
Meg, how about you? Any other partners that you haven't mentioned in terms of your work with Midcoast COG?
Yes, I would say the some of the land trusts are very active in this too. I want to just give a shout out to Kennebec Estuary Land Trust down in Sagadahoc. They have a lot of expertise. They are working closely with the communities on some particular projects, and they're a nice partner.
Great. How about you, Julie? Any particular partners you want to call out and shout out to?
Most of the partners have already been mentioned, particularly the land trusts as well. There are several around here. Also the Maine Department of Environmental Protection.
Great, great. And Sarah, maybe you can again sum up the main grant programs, the principal grant programs that are available to help communities and landowners with this kind of effort.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'll jump in too, but as you start to answer, sorry, that certainly the Maine Department of Transportation has primary or partial responsibility for a whole lot of the roads in the state. And I believe they have a specific grant program. I'm not remembering the name of it, but I'm sure Sarah does.
Yeah, there are a couple. They have a couple of different programs. One, Meg mentioned the, and I can never remember the official name. It's the Resilient Infrastructure Program. There's also a program that was with DEP for 7 or 8 years, and that is it's a grant. It's a culvert replacement grant program, and that focuses a little more equally on the wildlife habitats and the infrastructure. It's the two together, and some of the other ones are really about more specifically public safety. In the private sector, the Natural Resources Conservation Service has funding to help producers, so that's farmers and foresters. So a lot of the forest products industry in the state actually gets help in addressing these fish passage issues where they have an existing culvert. They can get both technical and financial help to replace those on the landscape.
Right. Well, as we're beginning to wrap up, I'll ask you where can listeners learn more? And then we'll ask our final question. That'll be a kind of a lightning round, but where can listeners learn more? Sarah, we'll list anything that we can on our archive website, but give listeners a sense of where they can learn more.
Yeah, your go-to place is streamsmartmaine.org. That is where we have all of our resources, and then you can link out from there. We link to a lot of our partners. We link about to other information and where you can find workshops and things like that. So that's your hub, and you can go from there to get a lot of resources.
And you can see that cool video that Liz mentioned at the beginning. That's great.
Yep.
Julie, any particular places where you'd like to point people to for learning more?
KnoxLincoln.org is our website, and you can find out more about what soil and water conservation districts are, as well as our services and programs. We have upcoming trainings in erosion control, in addition to the StreamSmart one, that's coastwise, that's dealing with the tidal, is a brand new program through Maine Audubon, you could learn more about that.
Great. And
Link to our website as well as Maine Audubon.
Meg, any advice on where people could learn more about StreamSmart and related issues?
Sure. MidcoastCog.com is our website. There's lots of information on our sustainability program and the study that we're working on, and also I think another place is, not just our region, but outside of our service region, any of your local council of governments will have someone who could point you in the right direction. So I'd
Great.
recommend doing that too.
So as we wrap up, what's one thing that you wish was better understood about the StreamSmart program? We'll go back to Meg, and then we'll go to Julie, and then to Sarah. Meg, what would you hope people might ask about? What would they like to learn?
I think the one thing would be that the issue is not simply just a pipe going under the road. Looking at it holistically, looking at it with a longer term perspective, looking at it not just to solve this immediate problem, but if you could do a StreamSmart, what all the benefits would be of that, and how what a good investment it is. I wish
Great.
people understood that more.
Great. Julie, how about you? What would you add to that notion of what people wish you wish people better understood about StreamSmart?
It improves the overall well-being of the ecosystem. So the health of the ecosystem, very similar to what Meg said.
Great. And Sarah, last word to you.
Well, I think Meg and Julie got the big ones, and so I'm going to use a bit of an opportunity to plug the next program, which is a sister program of StreamSmart. Julie already set me up for it. It's called Coastwise, and it's hosted by the Coastal Program. And I'm actually going to be doing a lunch and learn at noon today, just a quick hour overview. And the idea is that StreamSmart is for freshwater streams. but we have a lot of tidal crossings as well, and they're a little more complicated. When you get salt marsh involved, the water's going both ways, and so there's a new program to help folks address that. And so it's coastwise, and you'll start to see more of that. And we're going to be doing some trainings later this year.
Great. Well, maybe we'll come back to that for another topic for Talk of the Towns. We've come to the end of the hour. Be sure to join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for new topics, please email us news@weru. Our theme music is a medley from Cornac on a Balnain House Highland music recording. Thanks so much to our guests in the studio, Sarah Haggerty, conservation biologist with Maine Audubon, Julie Sells of the Knox Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District, and Meg Rasmussen of the Midcoast Council of Governments. Thanks to our underwriters, thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program, and to College of the Atlantic for production help. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.